Welcome to the Teachers on Fire podcast. I'm your host, Tim Cavey, and today I want to bring you another edition of what I'm calling Sparks, mini segments intended to spark your thinking and inspire your practice. These short episodes are based on my written reflections, which you can find on the Teachers on Fire magazine at medium.com. Today's spark is titled, Assessment Should Be a Conversation. I remember taking an undergraduate course on the works of Shakespeare in my first or second year of university. I was ill-prepared for the course, the readings, and the required critiques. As I recall things, my first submitted paper received a devastating D. I'm sure my worst grade in all my years of undergraduate work. It was a humiliating result, and it was a bitter pill to swallow on my first submitted assignment for the course. But the worst part? There was basically no explanation attached. I had a choice, of course. I could have booked an appointment with the professor to sit down and discuss how I could have done things better. But with my confidence shaken and feeling out of my depth, I decided to just move on. All I could do was try harder next time. What a missed opportunity for learning. Stop slamming the door. I remember this one scene from an early season of The Office where Angela speaks with anticipation about a coming performance review. Of course, when it actually came time for her review later in the episode, her incompetent manager calls out, "Angela, your performance was totally satisfactory," before slamming his office door in her face. Angela stands there, crestfallen, while Michael turns to other shallow distractions. Classic office moment. That door slamming shut is as much a problem for our students as it was for Angela. Sure, Michael's feedback for Angela sounded vaguely positive, but with no feedback, no insights, and no path to further growth or improvement, all it really offered was shallow validation. The more feedback, the better. As educators, we all know it's true. Grades do nothing to promote learning because they contain little to no useful information. It's in the rich feedback, kind, specific, and helpful, that we find directions to take the next step forward. In real-time feedback for real-time learning, I made the case that high-value feedback also happens in the moment, in the classroom, right then and there, during the learning, or immediately after the fact. Coaching in sports offers such a useful paradigm. It's actually better than a paradigm since coaching is teaching. A good coach is active, involved, watching, encouraging, offering tips and pointers and strategies during practices and gameplay. Sure, there's some coaching that happens in the locker room, some whiteboard illustrations, some video sessions, the direct teaching that needs to happen to properly prepare for gameplay. But the best learning our athletes do happens on the court, on the field, or on the ice. This is true because when the practice is in session, when the game is on, the learning experiences are still fresh and top of mind. And the best part? There is opportunity for immediate application and implementation. The athlete can develop right before your eyes. But that requires conversations. What conversation implies for our practice? Quote, "When students own their learning, feedback is a support and not an indictment," end quote. From Embedding Formative Assessment by Dylan William and Siobhan Leahy. If conversations about learning are everything, what does this imply for our practice? How should it shape our instructional decisions? Number one, more inquiry-based learning and project-based learning. One of the underrated benefits of these learning approaches is that they create less work for the teacher. And by less work, I mean less direct instruction. Less sage on the stage, less elaborate planning, less energy burned delivering content while demanding rapt engagement, less time spent on evaluation of student work after classes are over and the school day is done. Instead, these approaches offer much more freedom and margin to do what we actually love to do, coach, to actually talk with students about their learning, to sit down with them and offer kind, specific, and helpful feedback. Number two, more stars and wishes, less reliance on rubrics. There are countless ways to do this, but we need to be able to move beyond rubrics when and where we can, to actually write some feedback in our own words. Words allow us to connect in human ways, to recognize histories of learning, to affirm effort, identify key difficulties, and recognize small wins that relate to a particular student and their individual learning journey. This morning, I evaluated a class set of how-to videos, a project that my 8th grade media arts students had been working on. We were working from a defined set of co-created criteria, and I made sure to evaluate their projects according to each targeted element. But I also made sure to add some freestyle stars and wishes, whatever hit me as I watched their videos. Honestly, I don't always have the time and energy to offer that level of feedback to each and every student, but when I do, it's something I relish, because I know that this kind of feedback affirms and instructs in ways that a simple word, like proficient, or a letter grade or percentage never can. I also know, as happened this morning, that this kind of feedback opens the door to further comments, questions, and conversations, either in the Google Classroom private comments or in person. Number 3, more iterations of work. Imagine the silliness of lining up a basketball team and asking each player to take 1 3-point shot, then recording each result in a notebook, wishing the players a great day and sending them on their way. That's not what a good coach does. A good coach pulls the player aside, offers a pointer here, an idea there, then she asks the player to give it another try, and another, and another. We need to move into this thinking in the classroom as well. No, we can't offer 50 tries for every learning target or learning activity. Our students can't each give 50 speeches, make 50 videos, or write 50 lab reports. But we can start to move in that direction, to stubbornly resist finished products, to invite students to try again, to make our gradebook a living document. 4, more student self-reflections on learning. I wrote recently about how 3 simple questions can fuel cycles of constant learning for learners of all ages. Simply asking my students to reflect on what they are learning, how that learning is going, and which steps they will take next has been a powerful practice in my classroom. Their responses on Seesaw, both written and verbal, have opened doors to further comments and questions from me and from parents, broadening the audience and investing the learning journey with added significance. 5, more opportunities to demonstrate proficiency orally. Marissa Thompson speaks to the weight she gives conversation in her teaching practice and observation of student learning in this tweet. Quote, discussion is my number one method of assessment for reading and a great tool to prepare for writing. Hashtag TQE for the win. Hashtag unlimited teacher, end quote. Shannon Schinkel is doing it too. She tweets, accept conversation as a legitimate a form of expression of proficiency as any other form we would traditionally accept. Written, tests. Engage in conversation as a means of co-construction of comments on report cards. See what was learned through a student's eyes, not just ours. So how can we take baby steps in these directions? Well, where we've always given a written reflection, we might consider Flipgrid. Instead of a quiz, we could consider a quick conference. Instead of a test, allow an oral presentation. Instead of a written response, have a quick chat. Learning doesn't always or often conform well to the bounds of our linear closed constructions, as neat and convenient as those are. When we allow students to speak their learning, we allow more humanity. Number 6, more student voice in the reporting process. In Unconventional Teaching Practice, Grading Conferences, Caitlin Giordano describes how and why she lets students speak directly into their assessments. Others, including Trevor McKenzie, Shannon Schinkel, Jeffrey Frieden, and Aaron Blackwelder, describe how they sit down with students in various forms and expressions to essentially ask them to report on their own learning. What grade would you give yourself for your learning this term? What would you base that on? This is a scary place for us as educators. It requires a certain surrender of control, a signal to students that they are less subordinate and more partner, and an admission that we may not see and know every detail in what is their learning journey. But these questions can spark some rich conversations and powerful learning experiences. In summary, more conversations create richer understandings of learning. As I prepared this post, Josh Ogilvie reminded me of a concept called the triangulation of assessment. It's this idea that our evaluations of student work and instructive feedback that follows should be made up of a combination of products, observations, and conversations. And Josh tweets, huge advocate for the triangulation of assessment approach, great way to gather multiple samples of student learning, which provides a deeper pool and breadth of evidence of learning and evolves beyond the point of view that anything worthwhile is collected via a test. And Josh shares an image that shows the triangulation of assessment with conversations, observations, and products at three corners of a triangle. If education is human work, we need more conversations. Education is a human business. If learning thrives in the context of dynamic relationships, then it thrives in the presence of rich, ongoing human conversations. So let's do more talking about learning. Let's offer more human feedback. Let's give students more of a voice in their journeys. And let's do a better job of listening. Assessment of learning can be a one-sided conversation. Assessment as learning can't be. Let's get talking. P.S. Thanks to my colleague Megan Churchill Brown for drawing my attention to this lovely tweet and resource from Katie White, where Katie describes the power and strategies one might employ to use conversation as effective formative assessment. I especially love the conversation starters in the right column. See the image below. And Katie tweets, the power of conversation as formative assessment. We can observe, invite, question, uncover, support, refine, encourage, all through conversation during learning. Hashtag AT assessment. And I can't read all of the image, but I will read some of the conversation starters that Katie includes. What have you done so far? What is working? What isn't working? What are you trying to do? What have you noticed? Where have you felt challenged? What did you do about it? Did that help? Where have you seen growth? What do you need now? Where are you going next? How might you get there? What are you still wondering? And so on. My name is Tim Cavey, and I'm proud to contribute to the education conversation through the Teachers on Fire podcast. Make sure to connect with me at Teachers on Fire on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook to catch more from me and hear from amazing educators who are bringing growth and transformation to K-12 education today. And if you're interested in hearing more audio blog content like this episode, make sure you subscribe to the Teacher Blogs podcast. If you're hearing this episode on a mobile device, just search for Teacher Blogs on the very same podcast player you're using right now. Thank you again for listening to this Spark episode, and have a great day.